The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I think Reverend Master Mahon's dedication this morning could be a banner headline for this talk. Sitting still no matter what comes your way. Thank you. So, a home is a place of refuge. Home epitomizes safety and comfort, at least in the best of worlds or in the image that we have of home, though our own homes may not have quite matched that aspiration. From mid-August to mid-September, I had the wonderful opportunity to spend a month at our hermitage, Fugan Hermitage. And for several months before I went out there, and I don't know why these things happen in our lives or our training, but for several months I kept finding myself lying awake at night, awash in a kind of nameless dread, to crib Reverend Master Mahon's name for it. And I want to talk about today an aspect of this nameless dread, the recognition of the terror, instability, uncertainty, etc., which is the sine qua non of our lives, you know, which exists within our lives no matter what. And this was arising for me as manifested in things like flood. And, you know, it was just the 10th anniversary of Katrina, and we saw, again, images of this horrific flood, Bangladesh, Myanmar, all these places in the world where there are really terrible floods. Earthquake and tsunami, as we have had in Japan and Indonesia, Thailand, Sri Lanka, Nepal and Chile more recently. Famine and drought, as we find in our own dear California and Africa. Epidemic diseases like Ebola and HIV, the melting of the Arctic and all that that implies. So these kind of natural catastrophes. And here I was lying in my bed, safe in Mount Shasta, California, and I could maintain the illusion that I was safe here in my safe home on this little piece of land. And then the smoke appeared. You know how the smoke comes in August. And this, I don't know about you, but aside from everything else, that smoke has an ominous feeling to me. It tells me that something is very wrong. And so here was the smoke. So I added fire to my list of things to be terrified of. And this sense of life as fleeting and fragile, the possibility of my and our imminent dissolution, the possibility that I and we might no longer exist, came home to roost. And then I went out to Fugan, and when I arrived there, there was a 380-acre forest fire a couple of miles away, and it was definitely threatening the hermitage. So now things were getting really real. And in the course of a few days, that fire exploded into 3,300 acres, and I'll just tell you that by the time I left, it was over 10,000. And at some point, Reverend Master Astor called me to tell me that the Forest Service road right next to the hermitage was the fire line. And I say right next, but it was a mile and three quarters away. And this hermitage, if you don't know, is way out in the middle of nowhere, way off the grid. There's one other person in the whole, you know, drainage system of valleys there. And so I was quite alone. And the house is on the end of a kind of long ridge. And if you carried on up that ridge, when you got to the end of it, there was the road and the fire was across it. If they didn't hold that road as the fire line, I figured I was cooked. Almost literally. Now, I should say that my life was not in danger. At all times, I knew that I had enough time to evacuate and a way out. So, And what was interesting to me was how terrified I was, in spite of the fact that my life wasn't in danger, and I would have time to bring, you know, my computer and my kesa with me. So, anyway, then, after a couple of weeks, rain was forecast, 100% chance of rain in the middle of the night. So this was good news. However, I was woken up, in the middle of the night by the wind. The wind was phenomenal. I mean, it was hurricane force. The trees weren't just kind of, you know, gently swaying. They were whooshing back and forth from bottom to top, and this way and that way. And so while I had been so glad that this rain was coming, the front in front of it was creating this wind, and I had images of my mind of this causing the fire to crown, you know, go to the tops of the trees, and then just leap from tree to tree right down towards the house I was in. And now I was really terrified. And I'm not sure I've ever experienced such terror. And I could tell myself all the things about how unrealistic I was being, but nonetheless, there was this terror arising. So I walked around the house looking out the windows for fire for a while, until it finally started to rain, at which point I felt a little better. Now I'm going to tell you the end of the story, which is that the next morning, I'll come back to this fire. The next morning I woke up and it had rained very hard for several hours. And I woke up and the sky was bright blue and the air was totally pure and clean. It was as if everything had been, you know, washed clean. You know how that is? There wasn't a charred tree in sight. And I called the public information office and said, "What happened last night?" And they said, "Well, it rained. Everything's fine." And I said, "Well, what about the wind?" And they said, "What wind?" And it turned out that this wind had been very localized and it hadn't affected the fire at all. So all this time that I was lying there terrified, everything was fine. And I could have enjoyed the wind, which I love. Nonetheless, it was an interesting experience. And then I became aware of the stream of refugees coming into Europe every day from the Middle East, Syria, Afghanistan. Those of you who watch the news, every day there are these video clips, these images of this stream of humanity pouring across borders, their homes not safe, day after day, endlessly leaving home behind and bringing almost nothing with them, flowing into foreign countries, not knowing what's going to become of them, how things will work out, but hoping for a better life, leaving their homes behind. So, our homes are not safe, and we aren't safe at home. The illusion of my little protected safe space was shattered, which forced me to the recognition that life is full of disintegration, wreckage, horror, decay, destruction, violence, and death. You know those news clips where they say, I can't remember the exact wording, they say at the beginning, you know, difficult content, be careful about watching this. You might feel that way about this Dharma talk. Disintegration, wreckage, horror, decay, destruction, violence, and death. And this brought me to the recognition that this disintegration needed to be integrated, that it wasn't something I could get away from. Living in my comfortable monastery in Northern California, I wasn't going to be able to escape it. So this disintegration was screaming for acceptance. Now we spend our lives and our energy, I'm sure you're all familiar with this, trying to get away from that which is uncomfortable to that which is comfortable, from the unpleasant to that which is pleasant, from the ugly to the beautiful, the healthy to the unhealthy, the bad to the good. It's almost an instinctive knee-jerk reaction or response to whatever arises. And I remember my first Jukai discussion as a transmitted monk. So this is my first opportunity in a kind of, you know, teaching role. And everyone was talking about how not to break the precepts and how to keep them, how to be pleasant and kind and not be angry. And of course, this is very necessary. And when you're doing a retreat on the precepts, which Jukai is, of course that's what you're going to talk about, right? But I'm sitting listening to this, and what I'm thinking is that this actually creates two piles, the pile of what's good and the pile of what's bad, and the pile of what we want to be and the pile of what we don't want and want to get rid of. And that this is really the story of our lives. We're constantly separating these things out and dividing them up. But what the Dharma is about is holding close both what we want and what we don't want, and being willing to love them both. So sitting in the center of this sense of terror, as I have described to you, led me to the further recognition that if we want birth, then there will be death. If we create, it will fall apart. If there is health, there is also disease. And if the planet is to have life and movement to it, there will be earthquake, flood, fire, tsunami, etc. Bodhidharma, whose festival we've just celebrated, writes in his famous Outline of Practice, "Calamity forever alternates with prosperity." So you see, he's backing me up, just in case you don't believe me. And I would add, he says, "Calamity forever alternates with prosperity." I would add, this is an eternal law. And this is an aspect, and I emphasize an aspect, of seeing things as they really are. So that phrase we commonly use, seeing things as they really are, this is an aspect of it. As things really are, what's born dies. Now recently I read James Campbell's book, but it's Joseph Campbell, isn't it? The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And, you know, I missed the Joseph Campbell extravaganza in the 80s because I was traveling overseas, so I'm a little behind the times here. But I was actually quite moved by this book. And I found his main point to be that the hero that he's writing about, which is the truly religious figure, Campbell insists that myth not be secularized, and that it's actually the religious aspect of myth that's most important. And if we take that religious aspect out of it, we've vitiated it. And I was really impressed by that, coming from a scholar in a sense. In any case, his main point is that the hero, the truly religious figure, is the one who sees clearly both the absolute horror and terror of life equally with the sublime and the ecstatic joy of life. The terror equally with the sublime. She is the one who integrates these and finds within them the truth, the elixir, that which saves and returns her people to offer this elixir to them. I'm sorry, returns to her people to offer the elixir to them. So the hero sees the horror and the sublime and finds the medicine for all suffering, in effect, brings it back, as the Buddha did, you know, when he decided to teach. So, as Buddhists, this is also our religious practice, to integrate the terror and the sublime, the disintegration and the rebirth. This is samsara, the endless wheel of birth and death, to put it in Buddhist terms, the endless wheel of suffering and joy. So as long as we are accepting some things and rejecting others, we aren't practicing religion. We're actually cutting off half the wheel and it's going thump, thump, thump. And there's no safety. There's actually no safety if we cut off the disintegration and the terror and the decay and that which horrifies us. There is no safety. So what makes it possible to integrate the terror and the sublime? What's the elixir that Joseph Campbell mentions? I think first it's important to keep in mind or to know that there's nothing we can't bear, including death, as long as we're willing to surrender to what is. So what makes it bearable is the recognition, which Reverend Master Scholastica actually mentioned last week in her Dharma talk and spoke so eloquently of, the recognition that we're not separate. We are not separate from each other or from anything else. Separation is actually the root delusion. We talk about being deluded, and there are all kinds of ways in which that delusion can manifest. But underneath all delusion is this belief that we're separate. And because we think we're separate, we're convinced that it matters that we survive. And when we know that we aren't separate, we can allow for dissolution, allow ourselves to dissolve into death, storm, fire, flood, earthquake, a dewdrop slipping into the shining sea, or a drop of rain rejoining the ocean. Nothing's lost. And this is the work of the heart, not the intellect. Can't do this with our heads. The heart is what knows non-separation, and we can know it if we listen to our heart. So, the first night that I was out at Fugen Hermitage, I was sealing the building and the land. We have this, have a ceremony that we do here in the monastery every evening. We seal the gates, and it's a ceremony of protection. We protect the monastery from that which can cause harm to it and all the people within it, the Dharma and the practice of the Dharma. And when we do that sealing, we ask that all that is of the unborn or of Buddha nature remain and all that is not of the unborn leave. So I was sealing Fugen, and I recognized, I'm not sure if it was for the first time, which would be somewhat pathetic, but it became very clear to me that it was my own mind or my own heart mind that created that which was not of the unborn. That these weren't demons or people or beings or storms or anything outside of myself. The demons were in my own mind. It's not something external that I need to keep out. It's my own fear, aversion, disgust, anger that conjures up the demons. Bodhidharma in the litany that we read today says, "Be aware, therefore, that all good and evil proceed from your own mind." Okay? So this recognition that the problem wasn't some bad guy who was going to come and hurt me, but what I was thinking about the bad guy that might come and hurt me. And then shortly after I came back to the Abbey, I happened to be celebrant for morning service, and I found myself dedicating the merit of morning service for all who are homeless because of fire, flood, earthquake, poverty, and war. So you can see how that was coming up from the things that had been arising for me. And immediately after that ceremony, we did the guardian deity ceremony, a ceremony that blesses this land and those who guard and protect it. And again, protect us and the Dharma within it. And I found myself requesting in my dedication that we see the demons in our own minds and hearts that make this place unsafe. That when we ask that we protect the monastery, it's actually us who are protecting it. And again, these demons are fear, anger, aversion, disgust, and desire too. But the biggest demon of all is the belief that we're separate and our endless attempts to preserve ourselves in our present form. Now, it's my understanding that the intention behind all our religious forms and practices is the undermining of the sense of a separation, of a separate self, the undermining of the sense of I. And I could repeat for you today Reverend Master Scholastica's wish list from last week. She called it ceremonies of letting go. I might call it today ceremonies of connecting. And what I see in these ceremonies of connecting are the ways in which our forms undermine the sense of separation. So things like the gassho, which bring together self and other, bringing together self and other, earth and sky, the rejected and the accepted. That which we, you know, the terror and the sublime. Meditation, in which we sit in friendship with whatever arises, actual friendship with whatever arises. The precepts, which prescribe all sorts of activities of body, speech, and mind, which alienate us from each other. Bowing, which undercuts antagonism, etc. Now, the other half of undermining our sense of separation is developing our natural capacity for compassion, empathy, sympathetic joy. And I want to emphasize natural capacity. This is a capacity that we all have within us that will express itself if we get out of its way. So while I was at Fugen, and the wind was screaming through the trees, and I was sure the fire was galloping toward me, my first thought was, how can I make this terror go away? And so, you know, there I was again, doing the same old thing. I want to get rid of this thing that is unpleasant, and I don't like feeling terrified, so I want it to stop. My second thought was, I've been a monk for 17 years. I'm supposed to know what to do. And I didn't think I did. My third thought was, sit right in the middle of it and offer loving kindness. And so I spent the next several hours until the rain started offering loving kindness to every being affected by this fire, including myself, the trees, the animals, the firefighters, however widely ramifying this fire was. And of course, by extension, to all beings affected by fire. I have images of a poor little mouse having to run away from the fire and leaving behind its newborn babies because they can't walk and the mouse can't carry them. Think of having to run from a fire and leave your children behind. I have to say that I don't think my mind has ever been so focused in my life, propelled by this terror. I didn't skip one second of offering loving kindness to whomever or whatever I could think of. So if you want to focus your mind, there's a way to do it. So what I'm trying to say here is that this practice of offering loving kindness is a way of, when we're in difficulty, when things are happening that we really feel that we can't bear, this practice can enable us to allow that compassion and empathy and sympathy that we have to naturally open, simply by reciting the words. You know, may these beings be well and peaceful and free from harm. May they be joyful. However you want to put it, you know, may they be at peace. So within this practice of reconnecting, undermining the separation, which is a continuous practice from one moment to the next, we come to know in our hearts that death is as acceptable as birth. The disintegration follows coming into being, and we can make it welcome. That pain follows comfort, that life's horrors and griefs can be embraced, along with joy and sublimity. Nirvana is becoming one with the wheel of samsara, not cutting off half of it. And if we don't cut off half, I'm sorry, if we do cut off half of it, we suffer. If we don't embrace both the sorrow and the joy, we suffer. If we do embrace them, we are enlightenment itself. So holding together in one embrace the horror and the sublime is our own true home. And this home is safe. This is what Dogen meant when he said that if we understand birth and death completely, they both vanish. And then home is not a place. It's the heart's true wish, manifesting in all things. The heart's true wish manifesting in all things, whether we like them or not. and we carry our hearts wherever we go. We are never without our homes, and our homes are always safe and comfortable. With peaceful hearts, we live and die in our own true homes. Thank you.